Good morning. Our scripture reading this morning is Esther chapter 2, verses 8 through 23, found on page 411 of your Pew Rack Bibles. So when the king's order and his edict were proclaimed, and when many young women were gathered in Susa, the citadel, in custody of Haggai, Esther also was taken into the king's palace and put in custody of Haggai, who had charge of the women. And the young woman pleased him and won his favor. And he quickly provided her with her cosmetics and her portion of food, and with seven chosen young women from the king's palace, and advanced her and her young women to the best place in the harem. Esther had not made known her people or kindred, for Mordecai had commanded her not to make it known. And every day Mordecai walked in front of the court of the harem to learn how Esther was and what was happening to her. Now when the turn came for each young woman to go into King Ahasuerus, after being 12 months under the regulations for the women, since this was the regular period of their beautifying, 6 months with oil of myrrh and 6 months with spices and ointments for women, when the young woman went in to the king in this way, she was given whatever she desired to take with her from the harem to the king's palace. In the evening she would go in, and in the morning she would return to the second harem in custody of Shashgaz, the king's eunuch, who was in charge of the concubines. She would not go into the king again unless the king delighted in her and she was summoned by name. When the turn came for Esther, the daughter of Abihail, the uncle of Mordecai, who had taken her as his own daughter to go into the king, she asked for nothing except what Haggai, the king's eunuch, who had charge of the women, advised. Now Esther was winning favor in the eyes of all who saw her. And when Esther was taken to King Ahasuerus into his royal palace in the 10th month, which is the month of Tebeth, in the 7th year of his reign, the king loved Esther more than all the women, and she won grace and favor in his sight more than all the virgins, so that he set the royal crown on her head and made her queen instead of Vashti. Then the king gave a great feast for all his officials and servants. It was Esther's feast. He also granted a remission of taxes to the provinces and gave gifts with royal generosity. Now when the virgins were gathered together the second time, Mordecai was sitting at the king's gate. Esther had not made known her kindred or her people as Mordecai had commanded her. For Esther obeyed Mordecai just as when she was brought up by him. In those days, as Mordecai was sitting at the king's gate, Bigtan and Teresh, two of the king's eunuchs, who guarded the threshold, became angry and sought to lay hands on King Ahasuerus. And this came to the knowledge of Mordecai, and he told it to Queen Esther. And Esther told the king in the name of Mordecai. When the affair was investigated and found to be so, the men were both hanged on the gallows. And it was recorded in the book of the Chronicles in the presence of the king. This is the word of the Lord.
I told Lance this week, I got him to read because all these hard names, and then I'll just skip them all. So he had to suffer through the difficult names. So thank you for that, Lance. But today we continue our study through the book of Esther, and it's quite a unique passage to consider on Mother's Day because it's, yes, Esther becomes queen, but it's not exactly a pretty situation for the women involved in this story as you consider it. But what I want to remind us of as we approach this passage is that God is working in the midst of it all. And we began to see this last week as we looked at chapter 1 and the beginning of chapter 2, where we saw what seems to be just political disagreements happening between Xerxes and Vashti. But what you see is you see that in the midst of all of that, God is taking them somewhere. He's taking the story somewhere, and it centers around Esther and Mordecai. And so we were only introduced to Esther and Mordecai last week, asking the question, who are these two and what part will they play in the rest of this story? Well, this week we kind of see them come into the center of the story, and they'll stay in the center of the story from this point on through the rest of the book. So with that said, I want to pray and ask for the Lord's help, and then we'll look at this passage together. Lord, we come to you today, and we ask that you would just calm our hearts, calm our minds, calm our souls, that we may see you, hear from you, and look to you for help. May you guide us, direct us, and teach us now. For your name's sake, we do pray. Amen. I don't know if you're like me, but there's probably some times where you kind of find yourself in situations where you say, how did I end up here? For me personally, I could even say that about the fact of me being pastor here at Grace. If you had asked me 10 years ago, was I as a southern boy going to end up in New England, I probably would have laughed at you. But with that said, now in the Lord's kindness, he's taken us on a path and a journey to lead us here. And Amanda and I, we say to one another from time to time, kind of have to pinch ourselves. And we say, this is such a good fit for us, for our family, this church, this community, this area. And we find ourselves in a position that we think God has strategically placed us in. And maybe you found yourself in some situations where you say, how did I end up in this room? How did I end up in this circumstance? How did I end up in this situation? And Esther finds herself, and Mordecai in this passage today, in quite a, both of them in unique situations. Where Esther, through some questionable circumstances, finds herself becoming queen. And then Mordecai finds himself soon after that in a situation where he hears of a plot to kill the king. Both find themselves in strategic situations for strategic purposes in the story of God. And so, just as we approach this passage, I want to encourage you. You may be saying, well, what does my life have to do with this story? I want you to consider, is it possible that God has strategically placed you in the neighborhood you live in the job you work, in the places where you have your recreation and your free time, in the places you shop, in the family that you have? Has God strategically placed you there for a purpose? Because the truth is, you're in places that I just can't go to. It would be kind of weird if I just started hanging out in your neighborhood all the time. But God has strategically placed you in that neighborhood because you live there. So I want to challenge us as we consider this book is to say, where has God strategically placed you for strategic purposes for his kingdom? Because the story of Esther is a story of strategic purposes. Yes, of course, you say, well, she's a queen. Yes, but Mordecai is a pretty normal guy for the most part throughout this book. And he also plays a strategic purpose in the story. So our big idea, if you get nothing else from our time together today, I hope you understand this. God places his people in strategic places to fulfill his plan of salvation. Okay, all throughout the history of the Bible, you see God has strategically placed people in the story for specific purposes to fulfill his plan of salvation. And so we see this continued here in the book of Esther, but it's also important for us now on this side of the cross to see the part we play in all of this. God places his people in strategic places to fulfill his plan of salvation because he's still in the process of expanding his kingdom all around the world, and we get to play a part in that every day. So God places his people in strategic places to fulfill this plan of salvation. Today we'll look at three strategic moments in God's plan. Esther finds favor in the eyes of Haggai. Esther finds favor in the eyes of King Xerxes. And then Mordecai saves King Xerxes. First, let's look at Esther finds favor in the eyes of Haggai. And this is in verses 8 through 14. So just remember, last week we ended with, there was this big party. King Xerxes calls Queen Vashti to come and show off her beauty. She refuses to come to the party. He removes her as queen, and now some years have passed. And he's kind of missing having a queen. So he and his officials decide to have this kingdom-wide search. Remember, this is from India to Ethiopia. A kingdom-wide search for a new queen. And it's functional. It's like the beauty contest for the queen of Persia, right? And it sounds kind of nice, but it's not actually so nice. Because what the process would look like for these women is they would identify the women that were just of the age to marry but not yet married, and they would select the most beautiful women from all throughout the kingdom. They'd bring them to Susa to be on parade in front of King Xerxes, and they would each get one evening with him. All kinds of questionable things of what happened in those evenings, what that looked like. We can assume some things, but it probably wasn't great. And then after that evening, they went away, most of them never to be spoken to again by King Xerxes. And they lived the rest of their lives as functional widows. Like, yay, Mother's Day, right? but actually, this is important for us to understand that God is working even in the midst of truly difficult situations here. Because these women were selected, and we must ask the question, what were the chances, regardless of how beautiful Esther was, that she was the one that they took notice of? That she was the one that they recognized. And I can't help but think back to our study through Ruth. When we looked at Ruth and we see these moments, and the word for the loving kindness of God was this idea of hesed in the Hebrew. The favor of God. And this word appears again throughout this passage. The favor of God in the midst of truly terrible circumstances for Esther. We see the favor of God appear. And so the search is on to find his new queen. And we pick up there in verse 8. Mordecai and Esther have just entered into the story. And it says this in verse 8. It says, so when the king's order and his edict were proclaimed, and when many young women were gathered in Susa, the citadel, in custody of Haggai, Esther also was taken into the king's palace and put in the custody of Haggai, who had charge of the women. And the young woman pleased him and won his favor. Remember I said this idea of favor throughout the book of Ruth, this word hesed appears here. For whatever reason, there was favor from Haggai. But though God's name's never mentioned in this book, his fingerprints are all over the book. And in the Hebrew mind, they would have seen this word of favor, and they would have understood this also means God's favor upon a person. And so you have these women from all over the kingdom coming in to parade themselves in front of King Xerxes. And then you have Esther, and for whatever reason, out of all the women from different cultures, backgrounds, languages, complexions, she stands out to Haggai. So he would have known what to be looking for that King Xerxes was desiring in a future queen. And she stood out for whatever reason. And in and of itself, you say, well, that's a good luck, right? But we as Christians, we can't help but come to this and we say, no, this is God's work in the midst of all of this situation. In the midst of the brokenness that God is working, even in the midst of the brokenness around us. And hopefully we find some encouragement in that, in the world that we live in today. Where we may be saying, where is God in the midst of the brokenness? Understand that God is working in ways we don't see, know, or understand. She finds favor in Haggai's eyes. And he quickly provided her with her cosmetics, her portion of food, and with 7 chosen young women from the king's palace, and advanced her and her young women to the best place in the harem. So his response is like, hey, there's something about her. So he gives her all the cosmetics, the makeup, the oils, the attention, the women to care for her, to kind of begin to prepare her to meet King Xerxes. And then you just get a glimpse here about Esther's background in verse 10. Esther had not made known her people or her kindred, for Mordecai had commanded her not to make it known. So this is kind of the first time that you go, well, that's kind of questionable. This was kind of a big deal for the Jewish background individuals that they worshiped the one true God. And the fact that Mordecai says, cover that up. So it's the first example that there's at least some questionable morality throughout this book. And you see with Esther and Mordecai, I want to encourage you as you read this. Oftentimes we come to a book like this and we say, we just want to find some moral idea of how we can be like Esther and Mordecai. And there are definitely aspects we can learn from, but I want us to see that Esther and Mordecai are not the examples here. They're not perfect. But they're pointing us to the perfect one to come. They're pointing us to a perfect one in the future. They are vessels of a temporary salvation that God would provide, but it's pointing to a greater eternal salvation that would come through the truly perfect one in Christ Jesus. So I just want to remind us of this, that we understand this in the bigger scope of the Bible as we study this. And it's just a reminder that God uses the normal, average, broken, sinful individuals throughout the Bible to fulfill his sovereign purposes. And so it's possible Mordecai understood that there was some kind of anti-Jewish sentiment within the Persian kingdom, so he says, don't make it known, because if it becomes known, there's no chance you become the queen. But we don't know exactly, but for whatever reason, he says, don't tell anyone. And because he was the one that raised her, she listens and does exactly as he said. And you see in verse 11, he has some kind of influence in the kingdom. He has some role. You see him later sitting at the gate, which was a place of importance. So we don't know exactly what role he held, but he was influential enough that every day, in verse 11, it says, every day Mordecai walked in front of the court of the harem to learn how Esther was and what was happening to her. So he would have been separated from her. He would not have even been able to speak to her during this time. But he had enough influence that he could go by and he'd say, hey, how's Esther doing in there? Oh, fantastic. She's been moved to the highest place within the harem. Things are going well for her. So he was keeping tabs of how she was doing. In verse 12, it says, now when the turn came for each young woman to go into King Ahasuerus, or King Xerxes, after being 12 months under the regulations for the women, since this was the regular period of their beautifying, 6 months with oil of myrrh and 6 months with spices and ointment for women. So I just want you to understand this process. It was like you identified these women from all over the kingdom, and then they had this process to prepare them to walk into the presence of King Xerxes. And it over and over again, you just see Xerxes as this show-off. He's a show-off that's like, it takes a special person just to be in my presence. So there's 12 months of preparation. She's found favor in the eyes of Haggai, who's identifying women that might be potential queens. And then there's 12 months to prepare for this. Like I said, it's like a very strange beauty contest. But is God working in that cultural situation, in that kingdom at this time for a purpose? Yes, he is. So let's follow and see what happens. Verse 13. It says, when the young woman went in to the king in this way, she was given whatever she desired to take with her from the harem to the king's palace. In the evening she would go in, and in the morning she would return to the second harem in custody of Shaaskaz, the king's eunuch, who was in charge of the concubines. She would not go in to the king again unless the king delighted in her and she was summoned by name. So I want you to understand, for the people selected for this, this would have been devastating for most of them. Because they were selected, and yes, even if they were not chosen as queen, they would live relatively comfortable lives, but they would be separated from everyone else. They would be separated from their family with the hope that one day King Xerxes would want to spend time with them again in any aspect. Pretty slim chance out of the probably hundreds of women that were there that you're the one that's chosen in this. So you look at this and you say, what are the chances that Esther would be chosen? I think the chances are pretty small, regardless of how beautiful, how wonderful she was, that she would be the one that stood out in this moment. But as we see, she is. But this first strategic moment is Esther finds favor in the eyes of Haggai. The second strategic moment is Esther finds favor in the eyes of King Xerxes. This is in verses 15 through 18. So now we look there. It says, when the turn came for Esther, the daughter of Abihail, the uncle of Mordecai, who had taken her as his own daughter. So her parents had died. Mordecai had raised her. I just want you to picture yourself in her situation for just a second. An orphan, raised by her uncle, of Jewish background, in exile. The thought that someone of that background could have even the chance to become queen of the greatest kingdom in the world at the time seems highly unlikely, right? But when we consider that God is over all the kings, all the authorities, all the principalities and powers, he's in the heaven and he does whatever he pleases. So let's not miss that in the midst of truly unlikely circumstances, I'm sure she went in questioning her worth, value to even be in the room with Xerxes and all of this. You see, it comes her turn. And some scholars have said, most likely because Haggai had set her apart, he didn't want to send her in early because he didn't want the king to say, well, let's see what the other options are out there. So he probably waited months before sending her in with the hope that she would be identified as the potential queen or as the queen. And so, it was her turn to go into the king. She asked for nothing except what Haggai, the king's eunuch, who had charge of the women, advised. Well, this is actually pretty smart, right? Everybody else is thinking in their own intellect, what should I bring? What should I wear? How should I get his attention? And Esther understands that Haggai knows the king better than any of these women do. And she says, What should I do? What should I bring? What should I say? And we don't know what his response was there, but we know that she went to him because she knew he would know better than she would. And notice here, it says, now Esther was winning favor in the eyes of all who saw her. Once again, this idea of hesed, this idea of the favor of God, that for whatever reason, she stood out in the bunch. She was distinct in the crowd. And I think it's because God had sovereign purposes for her life. And everywhere she went, she found favor from Haggai, favor from the group around her. And now she's about to go in and meet King Xerxes. Verse 16, and when Esther was taken to King Ahasuerus, or King Xerxes, into his royal palace in the 10th month, which was in the month of Tebeth, in the 7th year of his reign. Well, it's important to note, history understands what was happening in the 7th year of King Xerxes' reign. This was right after his failed attempt to overthrow the Greek army. And so he's coming back defeated, tail tucked between his legs a little bit. Not quite as powerful as he thought he was. And he's coming back a bit down. And probably at this point looking for a win when it comes to the kingdom, looking for something to kind of get the people around to be excited about. And it may just work out providentially in God's timing that he meets Esther. Verse 17, the king loved Esther more than all the women. And she won grace and favor in his sight more than all the virgins. So that he set the royal crown on her head and made her queen instead of Vashti. So if you just look at this from a logical standpoint, the chances of this is very, very small. And yet in the timing, in the situation, she enters in and he identifies her. It says he loved her. He was smitten by her as soon as he met her. And his response, it says, she won grace and once again, favor, hesed. The loving kindness of God in the midst of this, that he was working in the midst of truly despicable circumstances. We look at this circumstance from our modern mind and we think, how could this happen? But we must understand the cultural context that this happened in. He was the supreme leader of this kingdom and whatever he wanted, he got. And is God working in the midst of a broken, sinful wretched leader? Yes. And the response is now you have Esther as the queen. And then in verse 18, you see, then the king gave a great feast for all his officials and servants. It was Esther's feast. So this is a theme throughout this book. There's feast after feast after feast after feast. And it shows once again that Xerxes often wants to show off how great he is. But he sees a great opportunity to throw a feast and kind of collect his people together to have something to celebrate about. And it's Esther's feast. He also granted a remission of taxes to the provinces and gave gifts with royal generosity. Scholars are divided on this of what exactly was happening here. Some say it was a holiday that he set aside for Esther. Some say it was 3 years of kind of a tax break. But whatever was happening, it was significant in the kingdom that he wanted to make a point to say, I have a new queen and she's pretty great. And so quite a turn this story's taken from like, God's not mentioned in this. This is a very secular story in chapter 1 to this Jewish background. Two individuals and Mordecai and Esther enter into the picture to very quickly now Esther is queen. And we should naturally ask the question, what is God doing here? How has God placed her here for a strategic purpose? And the rest of the story centers around that idea. And almost immediately, not almost immediately, immediately you see a direct impact. As we see this third strategic moment is Mordecai saves King Xerxes. So understand, now Esther's found favor in the eyes of Haggai. Esther's found favor in the eyes of King Xerxes. Esther's now been named queen. And now you see Mordecai in a strategic place for a strategic purpose in verses 19 through 23. It says, now when the virgins were gathered together the second time, Mordecai was sitting at the king's gate. So scholars are divided on this. They say, why would all of the virgins be gathered together a second time? And the best answer that I've seen is that basically Xerxes, in his show-off manner, he wanted to parade all of the women that were potential queens to then say, but I chose Esther. So for whatever reason, there was this collection of virgins that came through, and Mordecai is sitting at the king's gate. Well, the king's gate would have been the place where business was handled. It's possible he was some kind of magistrate in some kind of position of authority and power. It's also possible that once Esther became queen, she had him placed in a position of power and authority. We don't know exactly what order that happened in. But however it happened, he's now sitting at the king's gate. Normal day, normal business. And you may be asking sometimes, in my normal day in work, how can God use this? Well, notice the strategic thing that happens here in verse 20. Once again, Esther had not made known her kindred or her people as Mordecai had commanded her, for Esther obeyed Mordecai just as when she was brought up by him. So she's made no mention to relation to Mordecai. She has no known connection to him. She has no known lineage to his people. In verse 21, it says, in those days, as Mordecai was sitting at the king's gate, Bigthan and Teresh, two of the king's eunuchs who guarded the threshold, became angry and sought to lay hands on King Ahasuerus, or King Xerxes. And this came to the knowledge of Mordecai. And he told it to Queen Esther, and Esther told the king in the name of Mordecai. So immediately, what do you see? He's strategically in a place, and he hears the whisperings of, hey, the people that guard Xerxes' door, they plan to get rid of him. They're going to kill him in the evening. It's possible after this failed military attempt, some people made a decision, maybe it's time for a new king. And I want you just to consider the two kind of moral conundrums you see with Esther and you see now with Mordecai. Esther was functionally forced to spend an evening with Xerxes, and she was left with the choice, the moral choice, to deny this and potentially get killed or spend an evening with him and potentially become queen. She becomes queen. Now Mordecai finds himself in a situation, I can say nothing about an assassination plot, and an evil king is removed, but his queen may also be killed in the process. Or I can say something and save his life. this book is littered with kind of moral conundrums of what's best, what's right, how does this handle? And the question is, in the midst of really bad situations, really bad choices, do we see that God is working? Do we trust that God is working? Are we looking to Him as our source of strength, direction, and hope? Because though God's name is not mentioned in this book, His fingerprints are all over it. And so he hears of a plot to kill King Xerxes. And it just so happens that now he knows the queen. And so he passes it down the chain of command. He says, just so you know, this is happening. And then Esther goes to the king and says, this has been brought to my attention by Mordecai. Gives no mention to the relation they have. It says in verse 23, and when the affair was investigated and found to be so, both men were hanged on the gallows. And we think about this in a modern mind, but most likely what was happening here, scholars have talked about this at length, of what happened being, was it crucifixion? Was it some form that wasn't common in the day? They say most likely what happened is these two individuals were killed and then placed upon stakes, their dead bodies placed upon stakes to make an example of them. It said, watch out if you go against the king. And then just something that's important to note that'll come back later in the story, and it was recorded in the book of the Chronicles in the presence of the king. The king does nothing to honor Mordecai at this moment, but in a sleepless night later in the book, you see this comes back of importance. So let's remember that in the midst of, like, you read this and you think, these are kind of crazy circumstances, that God is working. And I don't know what your personal circumstances are. I don't know what your view of the current world circumstances are. But sometimes it feels a little chaotic right now. Do we believe that God is still in control? Do we believe that God is still working? And so I leave us today with four questions as we consider what it means to apply this passage to our lives. Are Mordecai and Esther ideal examples that are worth following? I'd say the answer is no. I'd make the argument they're not great examples throughout this story of being the perfect example that we should say, model your life after them. And if the answer is no, are they pointing us towards someone that is worth following? And I think that answer is clearly yes. This is a glimpse of something greater to come. This is a glimpse of God using broken people for a temporary salvation. This is a glimpse of a perfect salvation to come, an eternal salvation through a perfect, spotless lamb. We sang about that all during our songs this morning. So don't miss that Esther is just, it's just a glimpse of something greater to come in the story of the Bible. Second question. Do you realize that God is often working through extremely broken people and situations? So why can't he use you? And I think he can. I think he wants to. I can't tell you how often as a pastor I hear, I'm just not good enough, or I'm not prepared enough, or I'm not able. How can I? I say, neither am I. I promise, if this was up to me, if God wasn't leading me, I wouldn't do this. So I don't feel worthy for this as a pastor so often, so regularly. Do you realize that God is often working through extremely broken people and situations? How might he use you in your situation of life? He has a plan and a purpose for your life. Don't miss that. It's not by your perfection. That's the reason we all needed Jesus. We look to the perfect one who was perfect in our place, and we look to him to transform us to look more and more like him with each passing day. Third question. Like Mordecai, do you do the right thing even if it does not seem to benefit you in any way? If you consider Mordecai's situation here, he hears about an assassination plot, and telling the king this, it might actually lead to his death. Because if the people that are planning to kill Mordecai find out about it, they might get rid of him. It doesn't have any direct benefit for him. It's just an important question for us as Christians to consider. Do we do the right thing even if we don't see the natural benefit of it? Do we follow God and follow his ways even when we say, it might actually hurt my chances of a promotion? It might actually hurt the way people view me in this situation or this circumstance. Do we do the right thing? And understand, this sermon is not meant to say just, you know, pull yourself up by your bootstraps and be better. But it's asking the question, as Christians on this side of the cross, who are we representing? Are we representing Christ? And if we're representing Christ, we want to live like the King would live. And therefore, we want to do the right things because we want to honor him. The fourth question. Do you trust that God is using the events of your life to fulfill his sovereign plan? It's easy for us to read a story like this and say, yeah, that was back then. Do you see that you are actually part of God's sovereign plan? The fact that you're sitting here today hearing these words, do you actually believe that it's part of God's big plan of what he's doing all over the world and expanding his kingdom, making his name known? I think the answer is yes. But do we actually believe that? Do we actually live like we believe that? And if we believe that, it should lead us to worship. So now we have a chance to respond in song and singing and worship to him now. So I just want to pray and then we'll sing together. Lord, we just thank you. We thank you for your word. We thank you for the story of Esther. Though Esther and Mordecai are far from perfect, we look to you as the perfect. May we turn our attention to you. May we seek after you and follow after you through all we do. May we see the part we play in your sovereign plan all around the world. Help us to be faithful to what you call us to, each and every one of us. For your name's sake, we do pray. Amen.